Hi, wow, how fabulous to look out and see the, so many people in this room. So welcome. I'd like to start off by introducing you all to our panel in one moment, but just to start off by saying I'm Sue Jones, I work for the ABPI and absolutely privileged to be here today to hear some absolutely fantastic views and some case studies of what's been happening with regards to collaborative working. In June at NHS Confederation, both Neil Dixon and Mike Thompson called for a new ambition for cross-sector collaboration, and various call for actions and recommendations were made within that. Today, it's really great for us to have the opportunity to respond to particularly three of those things. The first one was about needing a clear signal from senior leadership that working in collaboration is a good thing and will help us get where we want to be. The second thing was about sharing successes, and you're going to hear some fantastic examples of great collaborative working from our panel today. And the third thing was about making it simpler, and Mike's going to talk to that today as well. So I'm not going to talk for any more. I say, here is the lineup of the panel that will be coming up to speak for you. And as you can see, we've got lots of people, so it is going to be quite a whistle-stop tour as we go through all of those. But it gives me absolute great pleasure to hand over, first of all, to Emily Lawson, National Director for Transformation and Corporate Development, and she's going to open our session for us today.
Thank you, Emily. So, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be kicking off this session. As many of you know, although I've worked in the healthcare sector on and off for 20 years, including in a little tiny biotech as my first line management role a long time ago, I only joined the NHS 2 years ago. And in fact, my first attendance was at the Expo 2 years ago where my role hadn't been announced. So I was kind of undercover walking around stalls where nobody knew who I was, which was a great way to see the place. And over the 2 years that I have been working in the NHS, I've been blown away by the innovation that I've seen people undertaking in the health service, both in the NHS directly and obviously in the broader health ecosystem. But the more I spend time on visits, you know, working with people, visiting locations where people were always really keen to show me what they've got, whether it's one of the NHS England CSUs or somebody on a hospital ward or a scientist in a university, I've also seen the massive frustration that a lot of those innovators experience, that although they're often able to improve patient care locally or in whatever the bit of the ecosystem is that's actually under their direct influence, it's incredibly hard to make more substantive changes within the system itself, or to ensure that any improvements, particularly sort of small technological innovations, sort of additional bits of kit, for example, are tested and then adopted outside that direct sphere of influence. So in addition, particularly since taking on this temporary role of Chief Commercial Officer for the NHS, I've been acutely aware of the challenges of leveraging some of the NHS's greatest assets to ensure that we get the right return on the money that the country invests every year in improving health in England. There can be a really unhelpful inertia around innovation in the system more broadly, perhaps as a society built on the misconception that innovation has a net cost rather than a net benefit to patient care and in reducing the cost of ill health, both to the individual and to society. So looking through the joint working material that's been developed and co-developed, right, with all the different participants of the health system working on it, I've been really pleased to see how it's been designed to make the most of the skills, resources, and experiences within the health system so that we can actually work together to make things better for patients. And the way that that joint working system has been carefully co-designed will, I hope, minimise the concerns that always exist in society when we regard the NHS as such a precious element of British society. The concerns around the inappropriate loss or usage of NHS intellectual property with or to the private sector. And if we can manage to minimise that anxiety and actually turn it into an opportunity, we can collectively then maximise the potential return on investment for the NHS for the money that we spend as taxpayers on our health and in doing so improve patient care. So from an NHS England perspective, we're keen to encourage any work that conforms to those principles, and those are set out in the Joint Working System Toolkit, and they've obviously been involved in the establishment of AAC, which Sam will talk about later. And so long as those improvements are focused on those which will best drive improved health and improve return on investment. So that includes those that transform the NHS through technology, the kind of technology which will support both better patient outcomes and financial efficiency. It includes how automation can help take cost out of patient pathways and back office processes. Working directly with some providers at the moment who are trying to pilot those systems, we can often get in the way of some of those improvements. And also where changes are going to improve social value. So supporting the NHS to achieve some of our sustainable healthcare targets through better products and packaging, and thereby improving the local environment and the local economy. So we're keen to see how projects can involve local stakeholders, including patient and staff groups, SMEs and third sector organisations, to make sure that innovations focus on the areas of greatest need as well as those of the greatest opportunity. So I'm going to be paying close attention both as a participant in the NHS and as one of the leaders of the NHS to see how we can continue to work together, and obviously supporting both from the sidelines and in both of my roles at NHS England at the moment, and seeing what we can, looking forward to seeing what we can all learn from the examples that colleagues are going to share. So I'm going to hand over to Mike Thompson, who's going to tell us about that from the ABPI.
Emily, thank you very much indeed, and thank you for that really strong endorsement. Probably everybody in this room would consider themselves to be a leader in part of their organisation. And I think we know that one of the key questions we have as leaders is, how do we get alignment? How do we get everybody working to the same end? It's enormously challenging, as we know. It's simple to say, but it's incredibly difficult to do. And I want to share a little secret with you. So you need to come a bit closer. Right? It's a secret that we all know, right? But it's a secret that we are not allowed to say. And that is that leaders like to be involved with the strategy. And they actually like to hand over often the implementation to others. But as we all know, a brilliant strategy without great implementation and execution really doesn't matter at all. And so one of the things that we've decided as an industry is, yes, we made some input into the NHS's long-term plan, as you'd expect. It was a minimal amount of resources, because the NHS is perfectly capable of coming up with its own long-term plan, and it's a really excellent plan. So we said what we want to put our focus on is actually working with the NHS to implement it. And we think that we have capability, we think we have resources, we think we have skills. So how do we do that? Because that will make the most difference to patients. And that's what this is all about. We've been doing this for some time. We started with signing an MOU with Manchester. This slide talks about some of the achievements which Manchester have seen through working in collaboration with the industry, getting projects up and running, and basically getting us to put our resources behind things which are going to make a difference to the priorities that Manchester set. So we've got almost over a 4% increase in commercial clinical trials being run in Manchester, 35% increase in clinical trial participants, 100% of hospital trusts are now research active. We've got 41 active projects with Manchester running at the moment. That's a phenomenal number of projects. They've seen 67,000 COPD patients having their treatment optimised, and they've even got an innovative health outcomes project looking at how to price based on outcomes in mental health, which is an interesting exemplar in an area where we know we want to move to and we found it difficult. There's something up and running in Manchester. So we're looking to try and build that out. That took senior leadership from Manchester to say we're going to do this. Right, we're about to sign similar things with Birmingham, and there's also projects which are being developed with London as well. So actually, in pretty significant parts of the NHS, senior leaders are saying, actually, this makes a lot of sense. We want to do this with the industry. This today is about sharing some case studies from great teams who've been doing that, so you can see that, and it's about working with the AHSNs to say, actually, we can do these projects anywhere in the NHS. Sometimes, as Emily really pointed out, people get a bit scared about it. So there's a great document, a joint working document there to help people. I also hope you take comfort from the fact that Emily, leaders in Manchester, Birmingham, London have said, come on, let's just get on and do this. That people believe that this is the right way to be working. We in the industry think the best thing we can do is align behind the NHS long-term plan, put our resources behind it, and find ways that we can meet local priorities and make a difference to patients. So that's what this is all about. We've got three great case studies, and I'm going to hand back to Sue, who's going to introduce the first one.
Thank you very much, Mike. So without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Charlotte Williams and to Alison Marcel, who are going to talk you through a fantastic piece of work that they have been doing in Mid-South Essex.
Great, thank you very much, Sue. So, hello, my name's Charlotte Williams. I'm a group director for strategy and new care models in Mid and South Essex. So it's really not that glamorous a part of the world. It's a little bit of typical England down there and between the river and the sea. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the work that we've done to innovate through collaboration. And my background before coming into Essex 2 years ago was working in the academic health science system, so about how we've managed to harness the existing infrastructure put in place for us by the NHS to support collaboration with industry. So we'll be talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, and good afternoon. So I'm Alison Marcel. I'm the Director for UK Reputation at GSK. For the last 3.5 years, I've been working across Greater Manchester and was involved in the conception and the development of the Greater Manchester Memorandum of Understanding between, that Mike's just referenced, between the pharmaceutical industry, and also part of a GSK team working in partnership with Health Innovation Manchester and other industry partners to support the implementation of the Greater Manchester COPD programme. Mm. And more recently, have been working with in London and in Essex with Charlotte.
Great. Thank you. So I'm hoping that slides. So this is the Mid and South Essex Sustainability and Transformation Partnership where I work. It's got 3 councils, 5 CCGs, 3 hospital providers that work together under an innovative group model. And we had a plan written in 2015 as part of the STP and 2016 STP development that said we wanted to be innovative, as said we wanted to change the model of care. But we didn't really have a very firm way of taking that forward. We had strategic objectives that said we wanted to do it, but not really very much going on. And my role was to try and say, well, what does that really mean? And what does it mean in a way where everybody is interested? Because adoption of innovation, as you know, is a team sport. You have to have everyone thinking that it's the right thing to do. And my belief is that the adoption is the hard bit, not necessarily coming up with the ideas. So unless we've got all parts of the NHS chain available, how are we going to take that forward? So we did some diagnostic work on looking at what did we need to drive innovation, where would we want to focus, what were people already doing, to systematise the adoption and the capability building that we needed to take innovation forward. And down the right-hand side, you can see the things that we've done over the last 2 years, so including getting CCGs brought in, through having a board member who's responsible for this and is actually our responsible executive for our collaboration with industry. Our assistant medical director for innovation happens to be Professor Tony Young. We're very lucky that he's a local surgeon down in Southend. And partnering with the NHS Clinical Entrepreneur Programme. There are lots of people who really want to work with you if you just provide a route for them into the system. And Mid and South Essex is a great system, but we're not particularly outstanding reputationally for anything. We've got a couple of universities, a new medical school, but it's really a very typical part of England where if you can make it work with us, we think you can probably make it work in most of the country. And we've also brought together an innovation advisory group, which was instrumental in developing the guidance that we're going to tell you a little bit about today. And we've underpinned that with some quality improvement techniques as well to help people understand about how they can work together to bring innovation forward. So on to the next one. So Ali will talk a little bit more about the actual agreement that we've taken forward in the STP, but I think it's probably fair to say that it was very difficult when I was working in the Academic Health Science Network covering Essex to get interest in working with, particularly with the pharmaceutical industry, but with industry in general because of a general sort of scepticism and difficulty around conflicts of interest. And understanding really the best routes to take some of this stuff forward. I had a CCG chair who said to me something like, I don't even know if I'm allowed to take a pen off a stand that a drug rep's provided. And you think, well, really? And these people are in charge of multi-million pound budgets. So I wanted to address some of that stuff and that mistrust. And we weren't really seeing the benefits that I knew were possible through working with the industry and that we'd seen in places like Manchester. So we worked with, particularly with Eastern Academic Health Science Network and peers over there to help broker a way forward with this. And I was just looking back at my emails to tell you how long it took. I think it was about 14 months and 3 or 4 different approaches through various forms of governance to get agreement on the way forward. But I think we've I should do something good.
It has taken some time, and our work has been centred on building trust and engagement across the local health system in Mid and South Essex. It sort of took the shape of bringing stakeholders together in terms of workshops, being able to bring and connect different parts of the system, and sharing first-hand experience of what's happened in Greater Manchester to really build that trust and engagement. And I think key is helping to evidence actually the value of partnering with industry and building that trust so you feel like you are in it together and you've got shared objectives and shared sort of vision moving forward. And one example of that is when we were invited to sit round the table at the STP Clinical Cabinet. So, you know, being seen as that partner and really walking the talk. And I think that helped build that trust across the local health system. And I think ultimately the key learn is how do we play to our strengths as industry partners, as to NHS organisations, to ensure that we align those resources and all pull in the same direction. And it was great to see that the work that we started in Mid and South Essex then went on to help inform the ABPI and the AHSN STP ICS cross-sector guidance, which is out there now for everybody to use in their local areas.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say that we still respect local sovereignty and governance within organisations. This is just about those common things we've all agreed as a system need to change. Gives you legitimacy to think about doing those things slightly differently. So I'm just going to talk about a couple of examples of projects that we're working on under this agreement now in Mid and South Essex. So here we go. So on the left there, because that's actually Expo last year, so a bit retro now, but that's one of our local innovation fellows. He's a rheumatologist from one of our local trusts. He's been talking about his plan to try and stream patients through outpatients with arthritis more readily and to link some of their reported symptoms into biomarkers. And he's working with Bristol Myers Squibb, is that the company name right, on doing that in our new outpatient model down in Southend. Tony Young's actually going to be talking later on about our virtual polyclinic model that we're using with intelligence from the pharma industry and also working with digital SMEs to revolutionise the way we deliver outpatients in our area. And on the right there, we've got a product called Maternity Direct, which is, we think, the first end-to-end product for women on their phone to chat to their midwife securely while the midwife is talking to them from within the hospital record, so they can talk to them about their pregnancy remotely. And that we're working with the industry to promote immunisation and kind of childhood health and health of women in pregnancy using digital communication tools that have been developed by the pharma industry. So that's a really useful channel for us to get information out there. And we know the challenge around childhood immunisation, particularly in our area, and it's a problem we're all struggling with. So we know that some of these projects will fail just because we're going to be working with the industry doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be ultimately successful, and we're still going to have to manage that adoption pipeline. But I think the key thing about working with particularly the pharma industry for us so far has been that they are subject matter experts and they do have the time and the resources to allow you to make a better business case for change. So helping us with economics, helping us with key clinical data, that's really accelerated some of the adoption of these ideas, particularly by our clinical cabinet. And the AHSNs help us to make sure that we're keeping to the right side of all the necessary processes and doing that and making sure that we're engaging with the industry in a way which we can defend. It's not the politically most settled part of the world in Essex, so making sure that all of these things are fully transparent about their patient benefits has been key for us. And lastly, this is just something that we're going to go ahead and do, and it's probably for us a nice example of where the industry is helping to broker our knowledge of other systems. So children's asthma in our area is poor. We've had a number of asthma deaths. We've had a number of problems, particularly we've got high smoking rates in parts of our county. We want to do something about it. And we're using our joint working agreement to do that with three different companies, actually, through that agreement now. And this is just some nice, colourful data to show you. But it's a big problem. About one in three ED attendances in our three trusts is a child. And of that, a huge burden is respiratory presentation. And we want to learn from what Manchester and Wakefield and other places have already done, and London have already done on childhood asthma, and not just repeat that, but actually to build on that and think about how we can innovate further for children in Essex. So there's just some examples of what we're doing if you're interested in knowing any more about how to try and get your 5 CCGs and 3 councils to agree and your 3 community trusts, then come and see me later on. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. I'm now in our whistle stop fashion going to hand on to our next duo, and Kate and Ben will talk you through their example.
Hi, my name is Kate Hall. I'm the Director of Capability Development at UCL Partners and also the Director of Adoption and Implementation at the West Midlands Academic Health Science Network. I hold 2 separate posts. I also support Gary Ford, who is the Chief Officer from Oxford AHSN, in leading the National AF programme. I'm talking today on behalf of the AHSN network.
Hi, and I'm Ben Osborne. I'm the Managing Director of Pfizer here in the UK. And actually, in a previous life, a previous role in the UK, I actually sat on one of the Academic Health Science Networks representing industry in London.
Right, so we're going to do a bit of a double act, as I suspect you are expecting. So there are, most of you will probably already know this, so I'm going to be very quick. There are 15 academic health science networks across England. We were established in 2013, and we are in the second licence period. So we're in the second of, the first 5 years has been and gone, and we're in the year 2 of the second licence period. And I think it's fair to say that we have learned an awful amount in terms of both working in collaboration with many different partners, but also in terms of learning from some of our mistakes where perhaps it hasn't gone as well as it could have in the, you know, where we thought it was. I think the important thing for me before I go any further is, and I've just reflected on it, even what I've heard so far this morning, it's not perfect. As Charlotte's alluded to, there are still quite a few challenges. I think that we are making really, really good progress working collaboratively with industry and other partners, but there's still quite a long way to go. Dido Harding, I don't know whether anybody was in the arena session this morning, was talking about the intersection between health and kind of health technology this morning. And the thing that I feel very passionately about is she said it's all about people. And ultimately, whatever industry you're in, it is all about people and behaviours and helping people to understand what they can and can't do, as Charlotte nicely alluded to, in terms of picking up a biro from a stand. And actually, it's all about working collaboratively to collectively impact on outcomes. So just really quickly, why the AHSN network feels so strongly about this? So we bring together health and care partners with industry to support improvements in patient care, some of which would not have happened without those collaborations. And I think that's really, really important to be really clear about. So whilst sometimes there's a little bit of negative vibe about working with industry, we are making progress that we would not have made if we didn't have those partnerships. Working with industry funding is a mutually beneficial way of developing new care models or undertaking real-world validation. And quite often it's with a lower risk for those involved. So we know that many NHS organisations are cash strapped, so there are opportunities to do things that you wouldn't have done before with some support from industry. And one example, which Ben will talk about in more detail, about successful collaboration, is our work with BMS Pfizer and the AHSNs through the medical education grants. And we'll talk about that in more detail in a minute. So we focus on innovation, working with industry, looking at new models, giving the opportunity to test things that we wouldn't have done before. So this isn't just about doing more of the same. This is about doing things differently. It's been very transparent, it's competitive. Certainly when I sat in the summer on a panel for the recent round, I was hugely impressed with the robustness of the process, the effort of the applicant partners, but also the amount of detail that the panelists and the people reviewing the panel went into. And actually just picking up from Charlotte, what Charlotte was saying, there's an awful amount of knowledge and expertise in industry that sometimes in the NHS we don't capitalise on, and I think that's really important. patient reviewers are on the panel, which I think gives a very different perspective and one that I really, really have learnt from. And I think the AHSN role is really important. We are neutral, honest brokers. We have kind of no other agenda other than trying to support industry and improving outcomes for patients. So I'm going to hand over to Ben.
Great. Thanks, Kate. So I'm going to just briefly describe the project, which has been going on since 2016, has evolved year on year with the learnings and insights being fed back in so we can really benefit from scale. And then what we'll both do is just share some of our own learnings and reflections that we think will benefit wider partnership work with the NHS. I think the first thing to say is we started off with a really clear common goal. And that is to improve the outcomes and experience of those patients that unfortunately suffer from atrial fibrillation in England. You'll see actually we did manage to actually do some work further afield, but we're really going to focus, the conversation today on England. Atrial fibrillation is, as we'll, I'm sure all appreciate, it's very common. Unfortunately, the consequences are significant in terms of impact on stroke. And for those patients that do have a stroke, the burden on society, the burden on the NHS, on social care is huge. Not to mention, most importantly, the burden and the impact on the patient and their family. So we started off with a really common goal. The action was pretty simple and clear, and back in 2016, the BMS-Pfizer Alliance decided that the way to tackle this was to essentially set up a grant-based program to pool our skills, knowledge, expertise, and experience, and actually work through the academic health science networks to bring in essentially projects from across England and fund those that really would have the most impact on patients, those that really demonstrated innovation, and really importantly, that had the potential for scale over time. So you can see here a few numbers. Over the last 3 years, we've had 58 applications. The independent review panel that Kate mentioned have actually selected 16 of those for funding. The impact of this in terms of patients touched is really quite significant. So 85,000 patients, we estimate, have essentially been reviewed as a result of one of these projects. And most importantly, 27,000 patients have had an intervention as a result, which is really in line with the NHS goal of essentially to detect, protect, and perfect for those patients that suffer with atrial fibrillation. We started off with the first two, but as we've started to improve the outcomes for patients, we've really started to now move more into the detect and really help the NHS ambition of moving to 85% AF detection by 2029. So really good progress. Two that I would call out in particular in the northeast in Newcastle, the AF care pathway up there was relatively complex, relatively inefficient. The whole pathway was essentially taken back to basics, clean sheet of paper, and genetics brought into how can we actually really profile those patients that are at risk of atrial fibrillation and they're most likely to benefit from intervention. Down in Oxford, a very different approach where there was great secondary care expertise, but it was really under pressure and the resources were highly strained. So what the project there chose to do was essentially put in place over 40 local anticoagulation champions in each of the GP practices who would essentially partner with the local secondary care centres. They will be educated, they will be trained so that they can bring that knowledge and expertise into primary care and get the scale and impact that was offered in secondary care, in primary care, closer to the patient. So really significant impacts, as I hope you can see. Many more projects that we can describe afterwards, but they are two particular highlights. In terms of learnings, I think we'll build on the previous presentation, perhaps call out some of the key ones. Kate, do you want to start?
Yeah, so I'm just going to nip along. It's a symptom of being left-handed somehow.
Sorry.
So, lots of issues with being left-handed, if anybody else is. So the learning, on a serious note, the learning is huge, as I kind of implied before. So the neutral role of the AHSN has been really, really helpful, and I think should not be underplayed. We all kind of tend to underplay our impact and input on things sometimes, but I think the kind of honest broker between industry and local organisations has been phenomenally helpful to, I guess, help people not be so nervous about some of the industry partnerships, but also to highlight to organisations what the opportunities can be and that it's okay. And we also have supported organisations with unblocking some of the governance issues, as Charlotte was alluding to in her presentation. What we've also seen is that positive outcomes of partnerships then in turn help others think, okay, maybe there is something that we can do, maybe there is an opportunity here. You know, everybody is a little bit competitive. Everybody likes to see a good story, and everybody likes to think, oh, maybe I could have a little bit of that. And what we've seen quite often is the organisations that are very proactive and very supportive of working with industry keep wanting to at quite a great pace. And actually what we've been trying to do is help some of the ones that have been a little bit more reticent to start working in a different way as well. The willingness of industry partners to work collaboratively, as I said at the beginning, there's a huge amount of knowledge. And whilst the NHS would like to think that they know everything, sometimes we have to accept that some of our colleagues in other areas have a different perspective and a really helpful one. And I think it has been really helpful to have that opportunity. Adoption of innovation is not straightforward. There is no magic bullet, so there are challenges with it. And I'm going to get hurried on, so I think Ben will want to say something. But just before I leave, Perenna Issar this morning was talking about shared commitment. And what she said was more people need to join the NHS, more people need not to leave the NHS, but we need different people in the NHS to help us work in a different way. And I just really feel very strongly that that is definitely important.
So I'll just say two brief things. I'm going to draw on the openness and transparency piece. Industry is often misrepresented, I would say, in the media and the press. And I think our open, transparent, honest approach, as you've seen in this project and throughout, demonstrates the way that we want to behave and the relationship that we want with the NHS today and in the future. And I put it to the group that as data science and technology come together in a way that they never have done before, we have the potential to transform healthcare in a way that we possibly can't imagine. But we can only do so in partnership, because no single stakeholder in the system has all of the answers.
Absolutely horrible to move people on, so apologies for that, but it really is important, and I really want Joe and Jeremy to share with us their fabulous example as well, so over to you two.
Thank you, Sue, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Joe Christen, Regional Access Manager covering North East and Yorkshire with Bristol Myers Squibb, or BMS as we've been referred to previously.
Hi, my name is Jeremy Pelton. I'm a project manager with IQVIA. My background is that I worked in the NHS for 19 years, both as a nurse and a service manager. I've worked with IQVIA for 19, 20 years as well, and I've been working with BMS over the last 3 years as a project manager, working with oncology.
Thanks, Jeremy. So I'd really like to begin by saying how proud we are to be here today to represent BMS and to share with you all how we are implementing a range of joint working projects across the UK in order to help the NHS to implement and deliver on the long-term plan. Jeremy. So, as many of you will be aware, immuno-oncology infusion services are incredibly stretched across the UK, and demand is only set to increase for infusion-related treatments. So, at BMS, what we're doing is working with a number of trusts across the UK to co-create innovative new models of care for patients receiving treatment. And we're doing this through generating efficiencies in existing patient pathways in order to increase capacity, reduce time to treatment administration, in order to enable more patients to live with and beyond cancer. To make this happen, BMS are working in partnership with IQVIA. We contract with IQVIA to deliver joint working projects across the whole of the UK, bringing together project management skills and expertise, along with the ability to share clinical insights that can be replicated at scale and pace across the NHS. I'm delighted now to be able to hand over to Jeremy, who is a project manager with IQVIA, as well as being a nurse by background. Jeremy works on an honorary contract with the NHS, and he's going to share insights with you into one specific project that he's currently working on with the Northern Cancer Centre in Newcastle.
Okay, thanks very much, Joe. So as Joe said, my background, as I introduced myself, my background is a nurse, and it's been great over the last 2-3 years working joint working projects with the NHS, working in partnership with BMS and the NHS. And I think the collaboration that comes from these projects are amazing. I thoroughly enjoyed the last 2.5 years. And the example we want to share with you today is a project in Newcastle where we started off a big project. We ended up with some proposals that came out of that project. We picked on one of those proposals for a smaller project, and we're already starting to think of the third phase and how we can start to move forward as a team, you know, working, you know, for the benefit of patients in this oncology arena. So the project was called Reducing Time to Treatment Administration. So what we were trying to do is get patients to their treatment quicker. And the first objective was to look at the 31-day treatment target. So how many patients were hitting that 31-day treatment target? What was the pathway like from the doctor seeing them, where they were diagnosed and there was a decision to treat, to them actually receiving the treatment? As part of the joint working, we engaged as many stakeholders as we could. We had a good work stream around communication, and we set up monthly project meetings with the trust, with all stakeholders involved, so that they could be kept up to date with, you know, how the project was evolving and how we were moving forward. As Joe said, we had a focus on immuno-oncology patients. Over the last 3 or 4 years, as I'll share with you in a minute, immuno-oncology has taken off, and it's really had an impact on, you know, the tertiary cancer centres across the UK. The right-hand side of the slide shows you the different deliverables that we focus on and we deliver as part of the project when we're working with the NHS. One of the most important ones is the patient perspective. For the first project, we did a patient survey. We got a good response, but the problem with self-reported surveys is it's often quite quantitative, it's not very qualitative, and you don't often get, you know, the context around why they're saying things. But the important thing we found was that from seeing a doctor, 25% of patients were waiting 2 weeks for their appointment. And that's quite an anxious time for patients. Once they got the appointment, another 25% of patients were waiting another 2 weeks for either their pre-assessment or the treatment. Again, a big anxious time for patients. You know, and this is one of the one areas that we wanted to look at. Staff perspective was also important as well. We did a lot of face-to-face, semi-structured interviews across doctors, nurses, schedulers, admin staff, you know, trying to work out what was happening with this pathway. What was working well? What maybe didn't work so well? What were the concerns for the future? And what were the possible solutions? Another big stakeholder thing that we do is we hold big workshops where we try and get as many people in as possible. And the aim of the workshop is to engage people, inform people, and where they want to be, get people involved as well. And it allows us to update people on a regular basis how the project's going, but it also allows us to get their views and how we can move forward. And the final bit is data capture and data analysis. We saw that there was a massive, as I alluded to earlier, a massive increase in IO use. In Newcastle alone, over 2 years, there was an increase of 444% of unique patients on IO therapy. The attendances went up 595%. So this is having a huge impact on the tertiary centres. We also did a postcode analysis as well, because we wanted to see how far people were travelling and, you know, where the different heat spots were, you know, where we could maybe try and help with solutions beyond, you know, the tertiary centre. And, you know, we did have patients travelling 200-mile round trips for either the doctor's appointment or the treatments. And it's what sort of solutions we could do to look for that. So at the final workshop, we sort of like pulled it together where we've got the basic pathway across the top,
from the appointment, the scheduler, the pre-assessment and the treatment administration. And then we've got the blue long-term proposals and the green short-term proposals. So we had the IT solutions, seeing how we could help this process by introducing new IT solutions. We had the improved use of satellite clinics, so looking at the postcode analysis, what could we do to get patients closer to the treatment? Looking at doctor scheduler communication, you know, how could we standardise that? How could we look at consistency? How could we minimise the variances within standard, you know, that small bit of the pathway? And the bit that's asterisk is the treatment efficiencies. We wanted to look at the day that the patient turns up for treatment, how can we make that experience the best we can for the patient? And it's asterisk because that's what we wanted to look at for Project 2. And from these proposals, as I mentioned earlier, we're also looking at how we can work into Project 3 as well. So Project 1 is done, finished. We're now into Project 2. We're getting to a point where hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have finished Project 2 and start thinking moving on to the next project. So Project 2 was looking at a patient turning up on a Tuesday morning for a melanoma clinic. What was their journey from turning up, seeing the doctor, going to the ward, being pre-assessed, having the treatment and going home? What was that time looking like? What were the touch points and how we could help them again, you know, decrease that time and, you know, increase their experience? Again, very similar, deliverables. But this time, as Joe said, we wanted to try and get a bit closer to the patient. So Newcastle suggested that they would give me an honorary contract. And part of that was that I was allowed on the ward to interview patients. I was allowed on the ward to actually see the pathway, work through and the progress of the pathway. And instead of having the individual surveys from last time, we had 25 face-to-face interviews where we were allowed to look at patients' frustrations and, you know, what they thought solutions could be. We repeated the staff perspective, but on a much, you know, more specific basis, looking at that one day. And we wanted to have a look at the patient pathway from a time and motion point of view, being able to look from 9 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock and see where the glut of patients were, where the sticking points were, and how we could, you know, improve that pathway and again decrease variances. Stakeholder workshops, again, were very important. You know, we've had one, we've got another one coming up, later on in the year. And data analysis was looking at the unique data points for each patient and being able to visualise that for the trust so they can see how they could move forward.
Thanks, Jeremy. So, to summarise, really, what's next? There are a number of examples. We've talked, you've heard about Newcastle. We're working with other trusts across the country. And I ask, really, our goal is to share these learns and the outputs from the projects so that more patients can benefit and the project outputs can be scaled and replicated at pace across other sites. We're looking at how we can connect with other organisations, other programmes such as Right Care, Cancer Alliances. We're involved in the Melanoma Patient Advisory Group as well. And we really hope that today we've inspired you to want to know more, to work in partnership with BMS as a trusted partner representing the industry to enable more patients live with and beyond cancer. Thank you.
I really hope you've enjoyed these case studies that show the breadth of collaborative working that's happening and quite how that's influencing both patient outcomes, patients' experiences and the patient care ultimately. But I'm delighted now to hand over to Sam Roberts, who's going to close this session and talk to you more about the opportunities for collaboration.
Thanks for the one clap. Who was that? I'll have a few more, thank you. I'm only joking. Thanks so much for having me here today. It's absolutely wonderful and so great to hear how these ideas are being put into practice. My name's Sam Roberts. I'm the chief executive of this thing called the Accelerated Access Collaborative, which is the umbrella organization for innovation across the health system. And that includes industry, regulators, the NHS, patient organizations, and government. So I was asked to speak on what do we think the AAC can do to advance this agenda, which is greater partnership working. So I'll give you two minutes on what where I think we're focusing, but would love to hear from you if you think that that's wrong and we need to do more. And then just two quick reflections. The areas in which we're focusing are, one is role modeling and two is creating opportunities. So the first is on role modeling. Is in everything we do, we are working in partnership with industry. And so that happens at every single level. So I'm actually employed by NHS England and Improvement. I happen to be their Director of Innovation, Research and Life Sciences. But I've got this joint role as Chief Executive of the Accelerated Access Collaborative. And so when I say we're role modeling partnership between industry and the NHS, that means we have industry and the NHS, so Simon Stevens and Haseeb Ahmed, who's your chair of ABPI, on the board of the AAC. Then every new policy we develop on innovation, so all the policies you see in the long-term plan, those are developed in task and finish groups that industry participate in. So to give you an example, we've got the funding mandate for devices, diagnostics, and digital products. We have industry representatives in that room while we're deciding how should the policy work, how are we going to change the standard contract, so that everything we do from a national policy perspective is developed, co-developed. The third thing we do is we measure that we are continuing to work with industry. So across the AAC, we have about 3,000 industry collaborations in our different programs. And we look at both the number of patients that are benefiting from that and the inward investment and the jobs created as part of that. So that's a core part of the way we measure our performance. And then the last is that we role model through joint delivery. So we focus on supporting adoption of specific products, and we do that through joint industry, NHS, patient organization task and finish groups, where we identify these are the barriers and we set about solving them. So that's the first category is, you know, we're trying to show that this is part of business as usual for the NHS. Collaboration with industry on the innovation agenda should just be the way we do it. It shouldn't be a 14-month MOU palaver, but I can completely believe that, yes. The second thing is that we're trying to develop opportunities where collaboration is required. And so the two that we're working on at the moment are, one is we're working with different clinical groups, and the AHSNs are working with their local groups to ask local staff, where do you think innovation is required? So that you guys will have a sense, so that we can do a bit more matchmaking on, well, there's a need for X here, this would be fertile ground for you to develop a partnership in. So that's the first thing that we're doing. The second, and there will be some talk later on this today, is the government's recently announced AI lab. The AAC will be delivering one part of that, which is the AI fund. And in that, we're going to be working with AI innovators on what is the use case in the NHS, how can we implement it in the NHS. And again, that is just a partnership part of our everyday. So role modeling and creating opportunities. I'd love to hear from you if you think those are the wrong things for the AAC to be focusing on. I suppose two reflections and areas where I'd like your guidance or help. One is from a life sciences company perspective. The thing that I found really interesting is that you guys often don't like to work together. So we, you often have multiple products in a category. Now, it's super confusing for the NHS to say, we've got a partnership agreement with this person, a partnership agreement with that person. So I was really delighted that some of you have overcome that, where you say, no, we support the category of innovation. Yeah, so you're saying to me 5 minutes. 2 minutes. Okay, yeah. Where we support the category of innovation, but that means you guys have got to work together and kind of not compete in the partnership. So that's one thing I would love leaders of life science companies here to think about, how you inculcate that culture in your organization. The second, speaking about culture, is what the guys in the audience who are from the NHS think we can do to make it not feel so risky in the NHS. So I only joined NHS England in January last year, and I have not experienced that culture that you guys describe. Right? We have Chair Dido Harding and David Pryor are all over this agenda. I mean, they absolutely live and breathe it, don't they, Emily? I was kind of scared about going to speak to Specialised Commission because I thought that they were going to be thinking I was going to increase their budget. That has never been the case. So within NHS England Improvement, we see this as a great thing. We see this as something we should be doing, that it's great for patients, it's great for the UK economy, it's great for NHS staff and improving services. But clearly, that's not how it feels when you work in a trust. So if you've got practical thoughts about how we can bridge that, heart feels at the centre versus heart feels, you know, when you actually are seeing patients, that would be hugely appreciated. So thanks so much. We absolutely live and breathe this agenda, and please let me know if you think we should be doing things differently. Thank you.
Well, I'd like today to say thank you. Thank you for wonderful examples. Thank you for the leadership support as well. And I think the message that has come across loud and clear is that we can achieve more by doing it together and by collaborating. You'll all see on your tables that this is the new joint working document that we've launched today. As developed with the Department of Health and Social Care and referenced within the ABPI Code of Practice, hopefully you feel inspired to want to do something collaboratively between industry and between NHS. And in this document, you can see here there's a flow diagram that will enable you to pick which is the best possible route to come together, depending on what you want to achieve. Thank you so much for coming along today. Thank you immensely to everybody that shared their thoughts on how we can absolutely achieve the innovation agenda by coming together for the outcome of patients. Thank you.